a special Patrick Snyder homebrew episode of
Brutal Battle.
Yes, it actually took a few times to get that intro down. If you can't tell from the sound of my voice, I'm a little under the weather, very congested and stuff. But remarkably, just a few hours before we started recording this, my nose just cleared. So I should be able to smell, I should be able to taste, no problem, which is a miracle. It's like my body knew, hey, we got to do this. It's a brutal battle coming up. So, like I said, the very beginning, Patrick Snyder homebrew episode. What does that mean? So Patrick Snyder is a home brewer who I had heard about through Kyle Norman, who obviously everyone knows. He's been on the podcast a few times. He's been a fan from the get-go. All-around great guy.
I like how you say everyone knows him.
Everyone should know him. If you've listened enough, you know Kyle Norman because he's been on it, but he's also been talked about. And he's been a fan since episode one.
Has he?
Yeah, since one. This guy's logged a ton of listening time.
As his wife has, too.
Yeah, Kelly Norman, that's true. We shouldn't short sell her because she listens along with him, and she's just as much a fan, I think. So Kyle told me about this guy, Patrick Snyder, who lives not too far from him, and he was like, this guy, you know, doesn't brew professionally, but he's doing homebrew, and he's doing an amazing job at homebrewing. So the last time we met up for, you know, family function, he was able to give me some of Patrick Snyder's homebrews to try. And Patrick brews under Hormtown Beer Company. Hormtown spelled H-O-R-M town, all one word. So that's what he brews under. And yeah, he actually has labels on his bottles and everything. Pretty cool. So Kyle just said, hey, you know, whatever you want to do, just have these on the show in whatever capacity. So I figured, let's do a showcase, kind of. In a sense. I mean, it's different, though, because it's not a brewery that anyone recognizes. But let's, you know, get info on his home brewing. Let's try his home brews just to see, you know, what types of home brews are out there. We've had some on the show in the past, randomly here and there. You know, Sean Finn's been on with it. And I can't remember. I know Sean Creel had brought one very early on that he and some others had done. A few people have given us some home brews. But this will be the first time we're doing multiples in the same episode. Also, we're going to try something new. I'm going to try to do a phone interview that I have recording equipment for with Patrick. Hopefully it works out. If it doesn't work out, then you guys will know when you're listening because I will just inject me giving a recap of what I talked to Patrick about. And, you know, that's typically going to be, you know, just getting his backstory on homebrewing and how he does stuff and just him in general. But at any rate, hopefully this audio works, this cell phone interview style works, because if it does, then this opens the podcast up for even more awesome things down the road that we can make happen.
Carlin is literally crossing his fingers on both hands.
When I was saying that, I did do it because I've already had some brewers from known breweries say, hey, if we can do a phone interview, we're in. So, I'm not going to say who because, you know, in the case that it doesn't happen, I don't want people to be let down. So, at any rate, so we're going to try these beers that we have in front of us. Rebecca and I are going to evaluate them. And we're doing this before I interview Patrick because I want to know what the beers taste like before I talk to him in case I have any follow-up questions. So, basically, what we'll do is we'll try one. Actually, I'll probably interject information from the interview from Patrick first. Then we'll do a beer. Then I'll put more of the interview than a beer and so on. So you'll hear it cut in and out. So anyway, Rebecca, let's try the first beer.
Okay. Well, do you have a bottle opener?
No. I meant to go grab one, but could you go grab one while I open this? I thought I was prepared. I was ill-prepared. This is just another, I feel under the weather, and this is the crap that happens. So I'll describe what the first one is while Rebecca goes to get a bottle opener. The first one you don't need a bottle opener for. This one's actually a 750 milliliter, and it's cork and caged. Very fancy, Patrick. It's called Endless Development, and it's a hoppy American Brett Saison. So there's a lot going on here. He even has a bottle date. It says it was bottled in June 4th of 2016. So I'm assuming any sort of hoppiness isn't going to be like that pronounced at this point. But what I want to point out about the fact that he bottle dated this is that breweries, you have no excuse. Home brewers are bottle dating. You can too, and easily. Oh, this might be hard to get this cork out. I'm gonna fight with it. And then I might end up having to edit out some of the fight. Oh my god. That's tough. Do we have anything to grip it with? I can't get this out. Alright, so... Alright, so I finally got it. I had to legit use a corkscrew, like a wine corkscrew, to get that cork out of there. It was, like, way jammed in. I understand why. You really want that stuck in there pretty hardcore because you have Brett in there still working, and you don't want the pressure to get to be too much that it blows up or blows the top off, and then the beer's screwed. There's a ton of head on this as I'm pouring it, so... for me, when I saw what this beer was going to be, I was like, whoa, because I feel like that's really ambitious for a home brewer to do a hoppy American Brett Saison. I mean, just the idea of like adding extra bugs to a beer, anything that's souring or makes it funky or anything like that, very ambitious, in my opinion.
Well, it's very carbonated.
Yeah, it's very carbonated. The head on top. At the moment, the head's probably 3/4 of an inch, between 3/4 of an inch and a full inch, based off the way I poured it, because tons of carbonation to it. But it's that uneven head that you get a lot of the time with Brett. It's orangish, almost a little yellowish tinge, but very orange, slight haze to it.
I started drinking it.
Well, smell it first.
I did. It smells like hay. Hops.
I smell like orange peel to it. I smell a lot of that funky Brett quality. Yeah, it smells... It does smell citrusy hoppy. It smells Saison yeasty. It's got, yeah, some of that hay you were talking about. Orange peel, Brett. Decent funk.
So I started drinking it. It has a very, very good flavor. A lot of what you would... Not a lot of Brett characteristics. I'm getting more of, like,
no, there
that.
Is.
You think so?
Well, I get more. I mean, a lot of it is there. I don't know what you're...
Okay.
What I mean, you're mainly
I guess it's there, but not... It's nice. It's just too carbonated for me.
I don't think it tastes as carbonated as I thought it was going to be. Like, I felt like, based on the pour, there was just going to be, like, crazy carbonation all over my tongue every sip I took. I know it's there. I know it's a bit over-carbonated. But it's not insane. I've had worse.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But the flavors are there.
Yeah, the flavors are definitely there. For some reason, the hops are still pretty present.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, it's given a bit of a citrusy kick to it. I think that's where I was getting on the nose, that kind of orange peel aspect. There's a decent bitterness to it. There's a lot of funk. There's a decent amount of funk. See, you're not really picking up on it. I'm getting a lot of that nice Brett funk.
Maybe I didn't bring my A game today.
Well, it's like every sip I take is encased in that funk. Mm-hmm. Like, there's other things in there, but each one's encapsulated in the funk character.
Well, what I like about this beer is, did you say the ABV?
No, I didn't.
4.86.
Good. Super precise, too, down to the 100th, huh?
Which I like. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you just want to have low ABV, but still have a lot of flavor, and this delivers in that area.
Yeah, you can definitely tell what this is. I mean, the hoppy character's there. It's very Saison yeasty. That's very front and center. Almost a tad bit of that kind of medicinal note that you can end up getting from a Saison yeast.
You're getting that?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not.
And well, and I think that's actually playing along with that Brett funkiness. Those kind of go hand in hand. And a lot of that.
I've already burped 3 times after drinking this.
A lot of carbonation then, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say my only real critique on it is carbonation would be good to be taken down a bit.
If the carbonation was dialed down just a little bit,
it would be dead on amazing.
Yes, it would be really, really good. I mean, it's still a really solid beer.
Yeah, it's really good.
I'm just like really sensitive to carbonation because it gives me gas.
I think everyone does that. Maybe, you know, when you know you're going to be drinking a really carbonated beer, just take some like Vino or Faison or something like that right before you do it, so you know you can have
a little Vino gas.
Exactly, which is probably why it's named that. But yeah.
Well, that's part of the commercial.
Yeah.
Good beer though.
Well, I mean, based off what we're actually, what we smelled and what we tasted out of this beer.
Delivered.
Well, I mean, and not only delivered, like, if it was a mystery beer, I would assume it was professionally done.
Oh, yeah.
I would 100% assume that. And honestly, I can point to plenty other, like, Brett Saisons that aren't as good as this. So, that are commercially done. So, all right. So then we would end up taking a break right now. And we're going to hear from Patrick.
Well, it's good to put a voice to the beers, I guess, in a sense.
Yeah.
So, so I am recording, so I can just get right into it. So, you're the Patrick Snyder, the guy that I've heard so much about from longtime listener and friend of the podcast and just friend in general, Kyle Norman. So, how does it feel to be kind of built up as a celebrity, in a sense?
It feels amazing, you know, especially coming from Kyle. It's, you know, high praise, and, you know, I have a lot of respect for him, and I drinking beers with Kyle very much.
Yeah. Who doesn't like drinking beers? And drinking beers with Kyle.
It's a fantastic way to pass the time.
Yeah, that's that next step. What was your inspiration for your Endless Development beer?
Endless Development, that was, you know, kind of modeled after some of the, you know, there's a lot of Saisons coming out into the market that are, you know, kind of pushing the boundaries of Saison, and that one in particular is just, you know, kind of a basic Saison with some friends of mine. They brew down at the Brew Gentleman in Braddock, PA. They do a couple different Brett-focused Saisons in their early releases, and it was kind of modeled after that, just pretty hoppy, but given the beer some age, you know, get the chance to develop some different characters than it had fresh, some more rustic farmhouse type aromas and flavors versus the more, it's a little more pungent fresh with some kind of new age American hops when it was fresh. So that was probably my inspiration for that is, you know, friends of mine that either brew in the beer world somewhere, or, you know, just friends talking about beers and, you know, what we can do with a beer.
Nice. So, you know, we don't hide how we feel about beers with our podcast. So, I had a good thing and a not terrible, but a little bit of a criticism about Endless Development. The mm-hmm. kind of not so good thing was just it was overly carbonated, but the mm-hmm. qualifier on that being that when we just let it sit for a little bit, all that carbonation actually went out relatively quick, like between 20 and 30 minutes after just sitting there, and then it was totally good. So mm-hmm. that said, the thing that I really liked about the beer was the level of Brett in that beer. The funkiness and how that came together with that base Saison was just, I mean, it was great. I mean, we even said on the podcast, I mean, I know you didn't hear it, you'll be hearing this podcast for the first time when everyone else does, but we mm-hmm. said on there that I feel like commercially, I've had beers that I would just think that was a commercial brewed beer, and it actually, in instances, tastes better than commercially brewed beers of that style. So,
thank you. That's, you know, I definitely, you know, like I said, appreciate your criticism, and the overcarb, that was, you know, in fact, I haven't actually drank one of those beers in a while, so I wasn't positive where the carb would be on mm-hmm. it, and doesn't surprise me. It was a little high. The base beer didn't dry out quite as much as I would have liked when I added the Brett, but, you know, that's why I put it in those heavy doodle they're basically champagne bottles, with the cork to try to, at least it wouldn't explode and kill someone. So,
yeah, exactly. That's definitely not what you want when you're sending a beer to people or having anyone consume it. So, well, it's good to hear that you're good with getting constructive criticism. Is that something
absolutely.
Is that something you had to come to? Were you more guarded about your beer in the beginning, and then eventually you were like, well, you know, I like constructive criticism now because I just want to get to a better place.
Right. I've always been pretty open about it. I'm not huge on entering competitions. I've only entered one or two, really just one competition ever that was not really a big deal. And I think in general, there's so many good examples of every beer style out there now. And, you know, I have friends that trade for beers and, you know, I'll search out for beers if I really want to try something. So there's enough out there that I can kind of judge against what I make to get myself a good idea of, you know, how good did I do or, you know, what level is it on. And so and everyone's palate's different. So I take everything with a grain of salt and, you know, every beer is not for everyone and doesn't bother me.
Yeah, because I'll just lay it out there. I'll tell you, most listeners know, I did one batch of homebrew. It did not come out. It did not come out very well, and that was enough for me because I was just like, God, all the sanitizing. And so I have tremendous respect for anyone willing to homebrew, even if they're making stuff that doesn't taste that good, because I know what it's like, and all the sanitizing alone is hell.
It's horrible. Yeah, it is absolute hell. Yeah, it's an interesting hobby. I love to cook. I love to. It's kind of an artistic outlet for me, and I'm not artistic at all. So I think that's what I like about it. It's a tremendous amount of work. It's kind of a pain in the butt most of the time. And it really, you know, a big myth around homebrewing in general is that it saves money, and it's a lot of times opposite of that, especially with some of these new age hoppy beers. You know, they're expensive to make. It's not a money saver at all. You can ask my wife.
It's more of a hobby than anything.
Yeah, definitely.
So you said you like to cook. You know, is that how you ended up getting into craft beer brewing? I mean, what was your path to get there? I assume you started as, you know, someone who is very big into craft beer, but what made you want to make that jump to actually brewing beer?
I think it was the cooking. I tried my hand kind of at bread making a little bit early on, and that didn't work out so well. So I was like, oh, I'll try brewing. And my first batch of beer that I made, it was in March of 2012. It was my very first batch. It was an extract kit my wife had bought me for Christmas, and so I made it and, you know, did the bottling, all that stuff, and it came out absolutely horrible. It tasted like Band-Aids, and it was just terrible. And I guess the cooking aspect is what drove me to try it. And then after my first batch failure, there's just, you know, I couldn't let it rest at that. I'm like, I can do this and make it drinkable so that at least someone can enjoy it, because no one could enjoy my first batch. It was just total drain pour. But
you're like, this, you know, is,
I was just,
you're like, this is not how people need to remember me.
Exactly. Yeah. This is not my last hurrah.
Yeah. Very good. Good on you for that one. So, So what are your favorite, some of your favorite beers at the moment from other breweries? I mean, I know you'd probably like to say Brew Gentleman quite a bit, but name one from Brew Gentleman and then some from other breweries.
Okay. Brew Gentleman in general, you know, their new hazy hoppy beers of any sort right now is, I think their double IPA Fashoma with Mosaic. I love the one they do in spring. It's called Albatross with all Galaxy hops, because Galaxy hops are just amazing.
Oh, yeah.
But commercially, my favorite beers are probably, you know, I love Prima Pils from Victory. I love German Pils in general. I love lagers in general.
Nice.
You know, I also love sour beers, and I just had the lemon ginger sour, I forget the name of it, from New Belgium the other day.
Oh, wow.
It was really tasty, easy to drink, low alcohol. So I'd say, in general, I love session beers, something I can drink more than one or two of and not fall over. But then I also love some really big, burly beers that I can fall over from.
Nice, nice. Well, you had mentioned some sour, so that actually would be a very good transition into we will try your beer, and then we'll talk in phase two about that beer and some additional questions.
And now we're going to get into our second beer. So this second beer from Patrick is Primitive Dawn, and it is a tart farmhouse ale brewed with wild yeast and bacteria. That excite me. Excites me. It got me so excited that I left a word out. It excites me because I like farmhouse ales quite a bit, and I like the idea of it being tart. Let's try this. Yet another one of these ambitious styles, in my opinion, especially to do as homebrew. Did you rinse your glass?
Yeah.
You good? Okay. Give you a little bit of that. All right, so Primitive Dawn. Let's take a look at this bad boy. Oh, it's very yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Like straw, like light straw color. Slightly hazy, but I can see through it.
Ooh.
Carbonation looks like it's way more under control.
It smells exactly like a sweet tart.
Does it? Whoa. Oh my gosh.
Like pixie sticks.
It smells like a lemon sweet tart. Yeah. There's a lot of lemony sourness on the nose.
It's a lemon drop.
Yeah. There's like a little bit of funkiness on there too.
Oh yeah, definitely.
A little bit of funk, almost a little bit of a Band-Aid note that's, I think, Band-Aid? Coming from that funk. But that's not a bad thing.
Okay.
And a little bit of honey, a little bit of hay in the nose. Definitely smells kind of farmhousey once you get past all those sour and tart.
Yeah, notes. I have a tough time like
getting past the sour.
Yeah, like yeah. I'm like that's all I smell.
Yeah. It is hard. You just need to keep sniffing and sniffing and sniffing and really concentrating on trying to just dive past
the sourness. I get a lot of the citrus, the lemon. I'm getting that. But beyond that, my sniffer is not as refined as your sniffer.
Sorry about that. Yeah. If people end up hearing any crunching in the background, it's because without fail, every time we record, our cat decides that she wants to like play with things like tissue paper and anything else that makes noise, although it looks like she may have settled down. But at any rate, this smells very good, especially for me.
Not so my style, we'll see.
Well, let's try it, yeah.
Ooh.
Here's the thing. It's really sour at first, but I feel like it backs down really quick. It's not nearly as sour as I thought it was going to be, which is good. Makes it more accessible. I do legitimately think it tastes like a less sugary version of a lemon sweet tart.
Yeah. Or like, aren't those lemon heads the ones that are like sweet and sour?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's like the sour coating on the outside, and then once you get past that, it's just all sugary sweetness.
Yeah. Kind of.
Mm-hmm. I can tell it's a farmhouse ale because once you get past the sourness, you're definitely getting that kind of farmhouse yeast quality. And it, you know, comes off a little wheat.
Yeah.
Wheat-ish, actually.
I can see why some people would really, really like this. I think it's very well done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not really big into this particular style of beer. But, I mean, I can drink it and appreciate what it is, for sure.
For me, I feel like it finishes a lot softer than I was expecting it to. I was kind of, based off the nose, assuming there'd be that kind of sour tart aggression all the way through. Yeah. And it's not like that. It hits up front and then it just kind of like dissipates.
Just like lingers and the finish is very delicate.
Mm-hmm. It does. It tastes finessed. It tastes like it's very well. This is really well put together. I like this quite a bit. Once again, if you would have given this to me as a mystery beer, I would have just assumed it was professionally done. I think Kyle Norman is turning out to be right about this Patrick Snyder fella. Mm. Gonna slam that down. So that one was good. So now we'll go to a little more interview with Patrick, see what he has to say.
So we tried the Primitive Dawn, and it's a sour, which is something that I just do not see happening all that often with home brewers. You know, I can think of maybe one other person I know who homebrews who has attempted sour beers. And I always thought, man, that's really super ambitious. So that one was called Primitive Dawn, and what it was, like a farmhouse ale with other bugs in it, basically, is how, I think kind of how you
Yeah. Use it. Yeah, yeah. So that beer was kind of a blend of, I had some Saison yeast laying around, just clean Saison yeast. I also had some leftover bugs from another sour beer I had made that had lactobacillus bacteria, pediococcus bacteria, and then all kinds of different strains of Brettanomyces, which is just a kind of a wild yeast. And so I brewed that very basic base beer and let it ferment out for close to a year.
Wow.
Tried it, and I was like, yeah, it tastes good. And bottled it up, actually served it on keg for a while, and then bottled it from the keg. And yeah, it's I just had a bottle of it not too long ago. It's pretty, it's fairly funky, not crazy funky, but it's not insanely sour either, which I like.
Right.
A lot of sours nowadays are just so rip your face off sour, and I like some of the more aggressive ones, and then some are just it's tough to get down. So
yeah.
That one's not too sour, in my opinion.
So really, it sounds like what you did with this was it's like a bacteria cocktail, in essence.
Yeah, definitely.
Just like let's see what develops.
Yes, that's each bacteria and yeast play different, especially in tandem. And I found that especially different cleaner saison yeast play good with them as well. So you get kind of that farmhouse saison character a little bit, but then the sourness, dryness, and funkiness kind of all play off each other into a drinkable beer.
Cool. So we were fans of this beer. Straight up. Didn't think we saw any sort of issues. Rebecca's not a huge sour person, so she didn't really want to drink too much of it just because that's not her thing. But she can recognize that it's really well done. I quite enjoyed it. I think it was the beer of the three that we had of yours that I enjoyed drinking the most because I just felt like the sourness was... It hit you kind of quick, but then it backed down quickly. And like you said, it wasn't too sour, and so you just keep going with it. And then you also got that nice kind of farmhouse underlying notes at the end. And it was just nice. It was a super nice beer, and I'm surprised that it's a homebrew.
I'm glad you liked it, man. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's awesome. So that kind of leads me to another question. So for like a beer like that, we talked a little bit about inspiration. So for a beer like that, where do you pull your inspiration from? Were you just looking at other beers in the market at that time and saying, oh, I like these, so I want to emulate that? Or was it something in particular that kicked it off?
I think it's partly that. Some of the new American sour beers that are coming, or even really kind of getting back to the Brett Saison, this is different than that since it's tart, but there's a lot of new variations on Saison that are coming out that a lot of them are tart to sour, balancing funk and that, and a few of those beers I just have completely blown my mind. There's beers from as far as sours go, my biggest inspiration goes to probably Jolly Pumpkin in Michigan.
They've been doing
a lot of sours and funky beers. And so commercially, Jolly Pumpkin's probably my biggest inspiration. And in general, as far as sour beers go, it's something that even people in my family who don't particularly like regular beer actually enjoy sour beer because it's more on the wine side of things as far as flavor profile. So they can kind of drink it and not be turned off by ABIBU IPA or whatever it might be.
Definitely. Cool. And Jolly Pumpkin's been around for a long time. I kind of feel like they don't get as much praise as they probably should for how long they've been around.
Yeah.
How long they've been doing sours. Like, I feel like they were doing sours even before they were cool. Like, well before.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So.
Yeah, and they have a really interesting concept as far as, you know, a lot of their beers, especially when they started off, they didn't ever buy yeast or bacteria or anything from a yeast lab. They, you know, they open up the windows in their brewery and let the air blow in, the natural yeast and microbes that are in the air inoculate the pre-fermented beer, and then they send it to barrels and let it do its thing for months to years and blend it, and this awesome microbial wonder of liquid.
Yeah, it is. So, you know, with interesting and crazy things like that going on, that leads me to my next question, which is, where's your limit with your home brews? I mean, as far as, like, any sort of limit you have, like, styles that you're like, I won't even attempt that style, or ingredients where you're like, I won't even try that, even though someone's wanted you to, or even just, like, the amount of work that you would need to put in.
Mm-hmm. I've never really thought of limits.
There are none, maybe? The sky's
there. There might not be.
You've just been pushing them consistently, so you haven't gotten to the limit yet, I guess.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, as far as stuff I'd say no to, I probably wouldn't go crazy weird ingredients, especially stuff I'm not familiar with. Mm-hmm. But in general, I think that you can really incorporate a lot of weird flavors and in different ways get them to come into a beer in a positive way. And so, you know, I'm always willing to try something once.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And that's how a lot of breweries do it. You know, they have a lot mm-hmm. of test batches that they're doing even while they're, you know, brewing all their normal stuff and distributing that. So it makes sense.
Sure.
It seems like you're kind of using a bit of the same method as them. So that leads me to my next question, which basically is, where do you see this growing for you, and in what way? You know, is this something that you want to transition to for any sort of, like, job, or, you know, what's your dream with this, or are you just going to continue to do what you're doing?
For right now, I'm pretty content with just with homebrewing. It's you know, homebrewing affords you a lot of freedoms that you couldn't have in a professional brewing world. You know, yes, there's test batches and stuff in pro breweries, but you know, a lot of beers I do at home, you know, just almost, you know, couldn't be replicated on a bigger system. Whether it be, you know, I did a pineapple IPA with milk sugar, and you know, that's one that has had so much pineapple in it and so many dry hops that on a commercial scale, it would take so much work to have people dice up thousands of pineapples. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, it's always a dream to, you know, open up a brewery one day. You know, I have a 3-year-old son and another son actually on the way in June.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it's, I have a day job as an x-ray tech, and it pays the bills. Mm-hmm. And as far as right now goes, that's kind of the most important thing to me, is just, you know, make sure the bills are paid, and then if I have time to make some wacky beer, then great.
I hear you. I can identify with that. I have a job to pay the bills, and then with my free time, I do podcasts about beer.
Yeah, and I'm sure it takes a more time than anyone could imagine.
Yeah, well, it might not take as much time as some people think, but it takes more time than other people think. It's kind of like that in-between spot. But it certainly is just a cost, but it's a cost for fun reasons. So much like your home brewing, sure. So I can totally relate to where you're coming from with what you're doing. So
Right.
But, all right, well, we're going to transition to the third segment where we try, is it too early for Flapjack? So we'll talk about that in a minute.
And now we're back to evaluate the final of the three Patrick Snyder beers. And this one, I don't just like because of what it sounds like it's going to be. And based off the last two beers we had, I know this is probably going to be quality. But it's called Is It Too Early for Flapjacks? And yes, people, that is a reference to the movie Groundhog's Groundhog Day. I almost put an S at the end of Groundhog's.
Groundhog Day
with Bill Murray. Awesome, awesome movie. So this one, it was brewed in collaboration with someone else.
Oh.
Yeah, so as we know, Patrick Snyder is Hometown Beer Company, but he also did it with Dillman Cold Brews Incorporated. I'm assuming that's another home brewer around him, and maybe I'll ask him about that one in the interview if I can remember. This one was bottled very recently, actually, just like a month and a half ago, pretty much, and it's 13% alcohol. Oh, did I give the percent on that Primitive Dawn? Actually, I didn't even have it on it. It wasn't on the Primitive Dawn, but that's fine. I'm assuming around 6 or something. So, Is It Too Early for Flapjacks is an imperial stout brewed with Nicaraguan coffee beans and Pennsylvania maple syrup, because Patrick is from Pennsylvania. That's where he lives. And he went all out because he even wax dipped the top of this. I'm assuming just to keep oxygen out from under the cap. And it's my favorite type of waxing, which is not too hard to just pop the top off. It creates that seal, but it's not super thick, so you have to like cut the wax away before you can get it off there. Oh man, this is pouring pretty thick, which is exciting. I like the look of this. Now, Patrick, I had been texting with him prior to doing this, and he said he is pretty proud of this beer. So, based off the last two beers, that makes me even more excited about it, if he's particularly proud of this one. Oh, so, this just looks very dark, very viscous. When I swirl it around, it definitely has legs. You can tell by the way it comes down on the side so that it is high ABV.
Yeah. And, man, it's just coffee.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah.
And some sweet. Like, I think I'm picking up on that maple syrup. I get some sweetness in there.
Yes. Yes, I can see that. And I'm also getting that kind of roasty, malty quality that you get in Imperial Stouts. There's almost a little bit of a chocolatiness poking through as well. But it's hard to get it because the coffee is intense. Which is good for us because we love coffee. It smells like it probably is cold brew coffee, too, because it doesn't smell like it's all that acrid. It smells smooth and well folded into the beer.
It smells like a dessert. Like, it smells like...
Coffee dessert.
A coffee dessert with, like, the sweet characteristics. Like, I want to eat it.
With tiramisu? Have it with tiramisu, maybe? I haven't even tasted it, but... Mm. Go ahead.
It's really good.
Whoa. Yeah.
You get a lot of that maple... I'm getting a lot of the maple.
Mm-hmm. So, the maple is throughout, which I was kind of surprised about. I thought it would be just a domination of the coffee up front, and then maybe you'd get some maple kind of on the end.
No.
But the maple seems to be all the way through each sip.
It's almost a little too sweet, though, because that maple is all the way through. But I can't say I don't like it. I mean, I like it. It's just of note, but it's definitely one of those sipper beers for sure.
Yeah. Super sipper. You can definitely tell that there's a high ABV to it, but I don't think I'd be able to pin this at 13%.
Oh, no.
I think I might say 10.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty big victory for Patrick.
Cause I feel like a lot of high ABV beers, I don't like it. I feel like it's like alcohol out my nose. I feel like I'm a dragon. Like fire out my nose.
Yep.
Not with this one. Can't tell.
No, that's deceiving. I do agree with your assessment that it does seem a little too sweet on the end. I still enjoy it. I still quite like it. That would just be my one critique, is to bring the sweetness down a little bit. Also, I think that, I don't think you can really get away with this, but I think it helps lend to it seeming a little too sweet. The mouthfeel that goes along with it is syrupy.
Yes. I agree.
So you're kind of like, it makes you think that like there's a lot of maple syrup.
You're drinking maple syrup.
Yeah. In a sense.
Which isn't not a bad thing, depending on what you go through. I mean, is it a beer that I could drink every day? No.
Yeah, no.
For many reasons.
Special occasion beer.
It's a special occasion beer. Probably, obviously, one you want to split with somebody, sip.
I think the coffee's quite well integrated into this, though, which is something that a lot of commercial breweries screw up on, in my opinion, because a lot of the time they do hot brew for the coffee and then put it in, which makes it a lot more acrid and acidic, and it just doesn't play as well with the base beer. I'm assuming that there was cold brew done for this because it's not as offensive as it could be.
Well, you can find out.
So, yeah, exactly. So in the next segment, I will hopefully find that out from Patrick.
Well, this probably was an expensive beer to make because maple syrup is expensive. Coffee can be expensive.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Also, I like the fact that he's using Nicaraguan coffee beans because those are like my favorite types of beans. South American beans I love because they're very... They're much more bold. They have a lot bolder character that I like for my coffee. So, this is good. I mean, I would say overall, all these beers are really well executed. Really well executed. And I'm going to have a good time finishing them off here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, when Rebecca and I tried Is It Too Early for Flapjacks, she went pretty nuts for this beer. It was definitely her favorite of the three. We did feel like it was maybe a little too sweet, which I think was probably emanating from the maple syrup, and that also made it like super syrupy. But we also felt that the coffee was extremely well integrated into the beer, and that there is no way that you could really tell it was 13% alcohol. So
thank you.
Yeah, so did you use cold brew for that?
No, basically I treated the beer in the fermenter as almost like the liquid for cold brew.
Okay.
So I just added whole beans, local coffee beans, to the fermenter and just let that actually sit in the fermenter by themselves for about 24, 36 hours and then rack the beer off the coffee beans into a keg and carved it up and bottled it.
Nice. So what was your inspiration for that beer other than the movie Groundhog Day, which it's clearly a reference to?
Yeah. So that was brewed with a friend of mine. His name's John, and he doesn't actually brew, but he loves craft beer. He loves trying every beer out there in the world. And so the name came from him. He's a huge movie buff. When he told me what he wanted to name it, I didn't get it at all. But then once he explained it to me, I was like, oh, okay, I'm an idiot.
It's a great movie.
But it is. And so the inspiration, this kind of actually goes back to, John, who I collaborate with, his brother, Robbie, is a good friend of mine, and he is he does the pilot batches of beer down at Brew Gentleman. Back to Brew Gentleman. And Robbie does a beer called Maple Breakfast. And, the basis of that beer is just basically it's a, imperial stout, but with a ton of coffee, a ton of maple syrup, and it just makes you think of breakfast and pancakes. So that was kind of the inspiration. And, Robbie gave us a lot of help as far as which way to go with the recipe and stuff like that. And it was kind of brewed to be borderline diabetic sweet, and that's something I was worried about. And it seemed less sweet to me than what I expected it to be. So I was happy that it was at least drinkable.
Right. Oh no, it definitely was. And you do, everyone listening, and you need to understand that when we're focusing on beers on the show, we're trying to pick them apart, basically. So it's the good and the bad. And clearly with all your beers, the good greatly outweighed the bad. So, and like I said, like with the Primitive Dawn, I didn't even have anything that I could really critique. So.
Mm-hmm. That's good stuff.
Yeah. And we'd be interested in trying more of your stuff at any time, whether that means we come up there and say hi and visit you at some point, because we can surely stop by and see Kyle Norman and family. So,
sure.
Yeah. And you had said that the Is It Too Early for Flapjacks is actually the one you're most proud of? Is it just for the reason of it was kind of the most ambitious idea, or what was your reasoning behind that statement?
I think that, you know, partly it's a beer that I mean, I've actually, prior to that beer, only made probably one other stout, maybe two stouts in my whole, you know, couple years of brewing. And so I don't do a lot of stouts. Stouts can be, they can be kind of tough to brew because there's a lot of considerations as far as keeping the mash pH right and a bunch of scientific stuff that's really boring. But so that one, I think from the beginning, I didn't know how it would come out and, or if I could pull off a decent beer. And when the final beer was done and we were drinking it and just the coffee and then, you know, some of the notes from the malt, the chocolate, it was almost fudge-like. And then the maple syrup, and it was almost like an epiphany. I was like, wow, it's like I can make a really good beer. And, you know, it was almost modeled after, I've actually never drank it, but Morning Delight from Top and Goliath, this huge, basically same idea of a beer that is people trade crazy beers for. And you know, for that moment, I was like, man, you know, I made a beer that, you know, not necessarily people are going to go nuts for and trade after, but something that was exceeded my expectations, I guess.
I guess that's really all you can hope for when you're doing homebrew, is that you exceed your own expectations.
Exactly. Yes, definitely.
So that's great. So I wanted to wrap it all up with a fun, odd question, because I've done that with other interviews that we've done, and I just kind of want to keep that going. So the setup is this. You have the ability to time travel. You can go into the past, you can go into the future, but you need to decide where you're going to go and what beer or brewery you're wanting to have at that point. Like, what brewery you want to visit during that time, or what beer you want to try from what brewery at that time?
That's a great question.
It is odd. It's a very weird one. I think run it past Rebecca, and she was like, that's a really weird question. I'm like, yeah, but that's what I want to do. I just want something kind of weird. So anyway.
You know, I would probably, you know, going back, one of my favorite beer styles and even beers to make is lagers. And probably one of my favorite lagers is Eyinger's Celebrator.
Okay.
A big Doppelbock that's just rich and warming and beautiful. So if I could go back in time, I would go back probably to the early days of Eyinger Brewery and just see how they were doing things and the beers they were making, and that would be amazing.
And actually enjoying it when it first came out in Germany.
Yeah, and to be in Germany itself would be a treat. But yeah, to see that brewery when the beers were coming out, see what the response would have been from the locals, and I think that would be a really great place and time to visit.
Nice. It's a good answer. Good answer. So
thank you.
To wrap it all up, I just want to give you the opportunity, if you had anything else that you wanted to say about homebrewing in general, or what you're up to or anything.
Okay. Homebrewing in general, I guess, you know, homebrewers do kind of get a little bit of a bad rap occasionally for throwing just anything and everything into the brew kettle.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that definitely is true. It's like I have a good friend, Sean, who's got into brewing here about a year or two ago, and he's kind of like the one guy that occasionally just loves to throw anything into the kettle, whether it be bacon, bananas, whatever's in his pantry. So I think it's kind of, you know, homebrewing can be looked down on because of that. But then also it's the hobby where you can experiment with anything, and it can come out just absolutely amazing to okay to terrible, but it's the freedom of experimenting. It is a great thing about it, so.
It's like mad scientist type thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and everyone should feel free to do that, just like I remember when I was a kid, and they had those little kids' chemistry sets. And I just enjoyed the hell out of just throwing everything together and seeing what happened. So
that's I did the same thing. I had I forget what the name of it was, but you made little rubber night crawlers. It was like an easy bake oven.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I think it was called like creepy crawlies.
Yeah,
something to that effect. But well, wonderful. We really did appreciate the beers. It's nice to try homebrew of that caliber, and to know that people are doing that out there, even if they're not, you know, at a commercial brewery. It shows a lot of attention to detail. It also shows a lot of passion, and it's cool. It's like, you know, it's like you said, it was a creative outlet for you. It's to be creative, and I'm a firm believer in everybody needs some sort of creative outlet. That's actually why I do the podcast, because that's my creative mm-hmm. outlet. If I wasn't doing that, I'd be finding some other way to have a creative outlet. So I think it's important. And if people listening have the interest in getting into brewing, I think they should listen to, you know, all the things that you've said and recognize the passion, and they can find that themselves. So
I agree. And, you know, to kind of what you talked about earlier about, what do I have going? I have a couple new beers that I'm going to bottle up soon. A couple more sours, one with apricots and one with grapes. Nice. I'll get you a bottle of each of those coming up. And then I actually have a couple new hoppy beers downstairs on draft right now. So if you're up and around these parts, or if Kyle Norman's headed your way, maybe I can get you a growler or two to try some other stuff. Because you know, the stuff I sent you, you know, the stout, like I said, I really liked. But the other beers were, you know, not my favorites, but certainly I thought they were decent.
Oh, I thought they were quite good. So, awesome. Well, yeah, we will not turn down having more beers from you, because you've proven you know what you're doing. So,
I try.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for the beers, and also for being willing to be the guinea pig with the phone interviewing technology, as low tech as it actually is. So,
no, thank you for having me, and I'm interested to see how the technology goes.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thanks so much, man. And just so you know, keep it brutal.
Well, hopefully, we end up learning some very awesome stuff about Patrick and from Patrick. And a big thank you to Patrick and to Kyle Norman for getting these beers to us and basically having the idea for making this happen. So thanks everyone for checking this out. And if anything, this is a reminder to everyone that, you know, maybe you should go out and look around and see who's homebrewing around you in your community, make friends with them. Maybe you can try their awesome beers. Also, commercial breweries. Yes, you too can date code. It's not hard. Anyway, thank you everyone for listening, and
keep it brutal.
This has been a Nerd Circle podcast production.